Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Fringe Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Michael Morris in Cape Town. Michael, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you. It's a bit wet and chilly, but besides that, nice to have a warm welcome from you from Johannesburg.
No, it's actually quite a pleasant day up here in Joburg. And we're also joined today by Terence Corrigan, also in Joburg. Terence, how are you?
Oh, again, Nicholas. Looking forward to discussing the events of the last cycle.
All right. So, speaking of which, last night the president opened Parliament on Mandela Day, and he gave a speech which I think is definitely worth analysing a bit. So, I think the overall takeaway for me from the speech, and we'll get to what you guys think of it in a second, was that. There was a lot of things in here that you can kind of read the way you want. It sounded a lot like something that a government of national unity would produce, which is that it was full of sort of compromisey type languages that that no one would be entirely happy with. But let me just go through the speech a bit. So what was interesting was, in contrast to the ANC sort of talking up their successes over the last decade, especially since Ramaphosa came to office, in 2017, Ramaphosa said, "For a decade and a half, our economy has barely grown," which is exactly correct, and that is one of the major crises that has been facing the country. He said that the new government of national unity was going to have three main priorities: to drive inclusive growth and job creation, to reduce poverty and tackle the high cost of living, and to build a capable, ethical, and developmental state. He said, "We are determined that growth must be inclusive. It must be transformational. Inclusive growth must drive the redistribution of wealth and opportunity. It must support the empowerment of Black South Africans and women and all those who in the past have been relegated to the fringes of the economy. We will continue to pursue programs that encourage broad-based Black economic empowerment, employment equity, and support small and medium-sized enterprises." So this is the focus on growth, I think, is very much a welcome one. Yesterday's show, we mentioned that growth should be the priority for government. But he also seems to be hedging it here because, of course, the things that he calls necessary for inclusive growth are part of the things that have created no growth and hurt the very people that these policies are supposed to help. The material position of many Black South Africans has not improved significantly in the last 15 years, precisely because some of these redistributive policies which have prevented growth in the economy. So a bit of a mixed bag there, but like I said, you know, reducing poverty, reducing the cost of living, growth and job creation, these are all very important priorities. National health insurance, which is a big bone of contention between the ANC and the DA. He gave some sort of vague statement, which you can kind of read in both ways. He said that there is broad agreement we must draw on the resources and capabilities of both the public and private sectors to meet the healthcare needs of all South Africans equally. In implementing the NHI, we are confident we will be able to bring stakeholders together and we'll be able to resolve differences. Now, that sounds like something suggesting compromise. And clarify misunderstandings, which is usually something you say when you're just going to bulldoze people and tell them that they're going to have to like whatever you put in front of them. So, yeah, I mean, you can kind of see that statement both ways. He said that as part of efforts to reduce the cost of living, there would be a permanent income grant for those without income, which is something the ANC promised in the election, an investigation to widening the number of VAT-exempt foods and deregulating the fuel price. Now, those are interesting because those are two measures I think that the DA has been pretty vocal and supportive, particularly during the election campaign. They talked a lot about increasing the basket of VAT-exempt goods. So the DA will definitely be happy, I think, to have that. Interestingly, he didn't talk about expropriation in the harsh terms. There wasn't, you know, returning the land to our people kind of rhetoric that sometimes comes out of the ANC. He was sort of quite moderate when he mentioned land reform, saying, "We will increase funding to land reform, prioritize the transfer of state land, and improve post-settlement support by strengthening the institutional capacity of responsible structures. We will massively increase the scale of investment in infrastructure through more holistic and integrated approach, positioning Infrastructure South Africa as a central institution of coordination planning. We are simplifying the regulations on public-private partnerships to enable greater investment in both social and economic infrastructure development. That sounds, I think, to me, relatively positive. He said red tape debilitates the creation of jobs. Every department and every public entity has been directed to reduce the undue regulatory burdens that hold back business from creating jobs. Now, that's very good. But here's the problem with that is red tape is such a vague term. It can mean anything. And there's not a government in the world that doesn't talk about cutting red tape. At least it's in there. It's definitely something that can be, I think, moved towards. He also talks about accelerating the release of public land for social housing and redirecting our housing policy to enable people to afford homes in their area of choice. Now, that does sound pretty positive. To drive inclusive growth, we need an efficient freight rail network and ports. Which I think is not definitely correct. And he also talked a little bit about the provision of title deeds for land and subsidized housing provides people with assets that they can use to improve their current economic position. That to me sounds pretty positive. It's something we've advocated for a long time, and other organizations like the Free Market Foundation, they have a program called Kai Alarm, which does this exact thing. You know, giving someone an RDP house, but then essentially making a tenant of the state where the house still belongs to the state is not very helpful to anyone. You kind of trap people in this, you know, housing. It doesn't give them that much to their lives. But if you give them a title deed, they can use that title deed to leverage it for other economic opportunities. And I'm very glad to see the president talking about that here. He finished the speech by saying, "We have a great opportunity to make this country a better nation. The coming together of all these parties that have decided to cooperate is a quite historic moment for our country. Make the government of national unity work and function and succeed. I'm determined, and I have been grateful to the leaders of all nine parties who have said with one voice, we want the GNU to work and we shall make it work." Terence, it's kind of you had a great phrase in our pre-show discussion about this speech. Some good, definitely some bad here, lots of vagueness. But what's your overall takeaway?
Well, look, I think the phrase I used was better than the past, but still not great. Look, I think there was it was very restrained in terms of the kind of triumphalism that one is often used to. I thought that the highlighting of growth was, or the lack thereof was very important. I thought that the hat tip to property rights was great, but I think it also illustrates the kind of chasm that still needs to be traversed. The doubling down on BEE, for instance, that I think is the great elephant in South Africa's economic room, and I don't think we deal with it until we manage to fundamentally rethink that. But that's a deeply ideological question, and I don't think that the ANC or the ANC is interested in doing that now. And I don't think that their relationship with the DA or with their government of national unity, which is national unity minus those who are not unified within it, I just don't think that relationship is ready to even begin such a conversation. And I think that's something that's that will have to develop in time. In the meantime, perhaps we can start to shift into a more kind of guarded pragmatism. So in that sense, it's a mixed bag, but a mixed bag with some pleasant surprises.
No, definitely better than some of the things we've seen out of government in the past couple of years. Michael, what do you make of this? I pretty much agree with exactly what Terence is saying, but what are your thoughts on just kind of the sort of tone that Ramaphosa was giving? And do you agree with us that this is maybe good, but not great?
Yeah, I mean, I think Terence has highlighted some of the key things, and as you have too, the very few practical things, the VAT, the fuel, maybe that reference to title deeds. But even those, we're going to have to kind of wait and see. As I mentioned in our chat before the show, I counted altogether 48 occasions where he used the phrase or the formulation "we will." And now some of those, might be quite specific things, the VAT and fuel and so on. But for the most part, it's the kind of sentiment that we've heard many times over. His speech, in fact, he refers to Nelson Mandela's inaugural government, his speech or reflection he made 100 days into that administration, in which he expressed much the same kind of thing that you hear, South African president saying again, repeating again 30 years later. So this gives us some idea that, we've been talking all this stuff for a long time. And the real issue will be when that "we will" becomes "we have." This "we have done this," "we have instructed," "we have written this law," "we have abandoned this," "we have cut this red tape," and that is what South Africans are waiting to hear. And I think, as both of you indicated, it's a bit unfair to expect him to have been able to do that this week. Simply because the institution itself has only just got underway, so it's a bit soon. But the fact is that in not many months, those sentiments will have to be supplanted by something much more substantive, if the enterprise is going to have credibility and going to last and going to be able to do half the things that he wants it to do. But there were some interesting things, weren't there? In the reference to the NHI, it's a kind of seemingly equivalent mention of public and private sectors. There's a huge degree of justified skepticism about just whether you can say NHI and private sector in the same breath and mean anything sensible. I mean, the IRR's own proposals, Anthea Jeffrey has written extensively on it, specifically highlights the potential impact of private and public partnerships in healthcare, particularly. And but also, of course, giving much more leeway to the private sector to deliver the kinds of results that it specifically can do, so effectively. Just low cost medical aids, if the government just stood out of the way and allowed that, that would already be an enormous contribution. And there's just as an aside, I mean, I think of the NHI, a figure that I used in a column quite recently, referring to the number of people who rely on medical aid and use medical aid. And it's always assumed that it's the haves who've got this and want to, the government, the previous government, ANC has always argued that this is, whites wanting to protect their privileges and so on. But in fact, the latest household survey from the Stats SA points out that something like, I think it was 51.7% of medical aid members in South Africa are in fact Black South Africans. So the society has moved on. The society has changed. People are exploiting every opportunity they can. They're buying stuff that they can now afford. The private sector is delivering it, and it's bringing advantages. And those are the people who are directly threatened by a scheme that might wipe all that away. So yeah, coming back to the speech, so there's some interesting things there. Private public partnerships in healthcare. But it's all, as you said, Nicholas, that it's a bit like criminology. We're having to read signs and ciphers and interpret subtleties, which are obviously very difficult to do. Nothing's very clear. So I think we're still in that quite early phase of trying to figure out what influence is being brought to bear and which inferences are being successful.
Yeah, this seems a lot like the sort of setting the stage for something that's going to kind of trundle along, do some good things, but not really make an enormous amount of change. But obviously it's very early days to see, but this is very much a kind of, it feels like a very dysfunctional van kind of managing to roll down the hill, and the engine is sort of working, but it's not perfectly working. And so yeah, no, I think in terms of things like economic growth and stuff, this does set us up to have slightly better numbers than the abysmal numbers we've had over the last 15 years, in general. but still, we're going to maybe hit, if we're lucky, the sort of higher end of the Zoomer years, which is like maybe 3% growth, which is so much better than where we are now, but that's really not enough to begin fixing South Africa's major economic problems. So these reforms definitely need to be much, much more intensive. And of course, all of this, the simply setting policy is one thing, and then you actually have to implement the thing. And as we know, there are still many vested interests who are going to fight tooth and nail to stop any kind of change. Terence, any final thoughts on this one before we move ahead?
No, I was just something that struck me about earlier in the week. Gayton McKenzie, speaking after his budget vote, was challenged by the EFF on part of the national anthem, and I thought his response, as they say, flipped the script. And he said that, "Well, if you want to live in the past, go ahead. We'll move forward."
Yeah.
Now, that's an interesting appropriation of that term, because living in the past is often, seems to imply bask up and hankering after apartheid. And I think that there's maybe a larger point there that does South Africa want to remain trapped in its current predicament, or are we going to have to try something new? And maybe there are some small, very fragile green shoots that in evidence here.
Definitely, we will keep our eyes close to this one. Okay, let's move on to our next topic. And this is, of course, a very important analysis that is framing a lot of what the Government of National Unity will be able to do. And that is a report out of Treasury that I think Hilary Joffre wrote about, which it's called Taxing Top Incomes in the Emerging World, is the name of the report. And it suggests something which we have argued for a long time, but this provides some nice hard numbers for it, that basically taxing the rich in South Africa is no longer going to be a way of raising money. You're not going to be able to fund, gigantic, super expensive projects like NHI or enormous extensions of the social welfare net like the ANC has proposed with the basic income grant. By simply just taxing the current wealthy population. It talks a little bit about how this concept in economics called the Laffer curve, which is that there comes a point at where taxation no longer actually generates extra tax revenue because the higher income earners essentially either leave the tax jurisdiction, downscale their work, their productivity to avoid more taxes, or alternatively use loopholes or tax evasion or that kind of stuff to get out of paying taxes. And the indication here is that sometime in the 2010s, probably around 2017, when the Zuma government raised the marginal tax income tax rate from 41% to 45%, that we very much hit that position, and we in fact went backwards in terms of tax revenue. So I think Michael, the sort of bottom line of this is that, this is exactly why growth is important. You can't keep squeezing the stone. You actually need to grow the number of wealthy people and the number of people who are taxpayers in the country, or else we are going to be in trouble.
Yeah, exactly right. And in fact, it reminds me of the one slightly disconcerting reference in Ramaphosa's speech last evening was his specific use of redistribution. Which is exactly what we cannot afford, actually. We don't have enough cash. We don't have enough assets in the country. What we've got to do is grow them. I often think back to a very interesting debate with our former colleague Gwenny Gwenya on national television, in which she said, it may not be fair, but we cannot share our way out of apartheid. We've actually got to grow the country. That's the only way that we get to do it. And it's quite a tough thing to have to confront, that it may not be fair. It doesn't seem just. It's historically anomalous. It's a lot wrong with it, but it's just a hard fact. We have to grow the country in order to become a different place. And that's what the real transformation will be, is when the tax base is bigger, then unemployment is pulled right down. Where is it now? 33%, just about. And for young black people, it's much worse. So, the tackling that is in fact making in the first place making a very considerable contribution to improving the lives of millions of people, but then also the benefit of having a greater tax base, more taxes, and more chance of providing an effective and lasting social net to protect those who really are vulnerable. So that's really the only way to do it, I think.
Terence,
Well,
anything
look,
to add?
I would say that the term redistribution needs to be properly understood. Redistribution, if you understand it in its economic or econometric sense, is about things like social services from which poorer people benefit disproportionately. And that's well and good. And South Africa's system is highly a redistributionist. The problem is that all welfare systems are premised on the fact that you have essentially a larger pool of wealth to draw from to support the beneficiaries. Now it's a problem that European countries and Canada are facing because, the post-war welfare states were premised on the idea of having essentially Catholic birth rates. Two, three, four, five children to support mom and dad, through the fiscus. Now, you've seen fertility rates collapse to sort of, one child to four grandparents. That's just not sustainable. Now, in South Africa's case, I think we've got an anomalous situation that the taxpaying class, if you like, are shrinking, except in the public sector, where the actual sort of economic knock-on effects are often very, very doubtful. And a very large dependent class. And, I'm not making any moral judgments on that point. It's just that you just can't make these books balance. And to try and spin some sort of moral yarn about it, and this is why I say we have to understand the word redistribution properly, as though as, to sort of phrase it as a kind of moral imperative, that is deeply unhelpful. As more and more of our high earners decamp for abroad.
That's exactly right. And I think that is a key thing to keep in mind is that, if policy continues in the direction where you're just going to keep trying to, crush down the sort of high earning tax base without actually improving the opportunities for growth, then you're sort of just going to go nowhere. You're just going to run out of money and then end up exactly where we are now. Okay, let's move on to our last story. Here is a. I don't know. It's one of those silly little things, but it's also quite interesting in what it says. So the MK Party, as I've said a lot on the show recently, seems to be kind of a bit flailing around when it seems to it can't entirely work out exactly what its strategy is. So it sort of has an approach of throwing everything at the wall and seeing what will stick. The most recent one is that they demanded that the South African Broadcasting Corporation, the SABC, not use the phrase "Government of National Unity." Because they said it wasn't true. It doesn't include us. It's not truly uniting. A government of national unity only exists when every single party in the entire government is included in it. Now, I mean, there's no like official definition of government of national unity. But anyway, of course, the SABC refused. And so MK has taken them to court saying that they want the public broadcaster's refusal to stop using the term declared unlawful and unconstitutional. This is a court case that legal analysts and I think anyone who knows anything about the law recognizes is basically garbage and is probably going to be thrown out. But still, it's interesting in showing, I think, that there's two things that the MK Party realizes are important here. One, The SABC continues to be the most influential media group in the country by a long way. And two, this idea of unity and a government of national unity is very popular. Michael, what do you make of this?
I was just, as you were talking, trying to look up the comments of Dr. John Schlope, who, believe it or not, is now the official leader of the opposition. It's amazing how South African politics, things can change in completely unpredictable ways. But, you know, in his comments last evening, his initial comments, he was showing himself to be his vigorous best. Ramaphosa is a sophisticated liar who can lie with a straight face. He knows no bounds when it comes to lying. And he, you know, he carried on in that sort of vein. Quite interesting looking at that in contrast to Herman Mashaba, who was much more pointed, actually, in a way, in saying some of the things that we've, in fact, been saying, talking about, you know, the promises and that the time for promises is over and we've got to sort of get on with more substantive things. But it is interesting that, you know, MK, as you say, is kind of floundering around a bit. Here was John Schlope, really seeming to be the courageous, outspoken figure, but in fact not really saying a great deal, other than expressing a sort of great anxiety and great sort of keenness to undo this terrible thing that was happening, which was from which his party is excluded. So yeah, I mean, it is quite an interesting reflection of the kind of official opposition we now have.
Terence, any thoughts on the story?
Yeah, well, look, the MK's entire playbook is built around disruption. I mean, you know, and I would also say disorder. You know, it's the only party that has a party leader that belongs to another party. You know, I think it's prospects to sort of survive the departure of former President Zuma are slim. I mean, you know, as they're being sworn in, Zuma is being called to a disciplinary by the ANC. There's something eminently farcical about this.
Yeah, he's still technically suspended member of the ANC. Although I'm sure he'll be kicked out in short order.
Yeah, but you know, he would claim that basically the ANC has suspended itself. You know, reminds me of that cartoon where people are saying, you know, goodbye Buerta, and Buerta says, "Well, where are they going?" Yeah, but I think you hit the nail on the head. Throw all the mud you can and hope it sticks. I would just also like to add a little codicil to it that the Parliamentary Committee on International Affairs a few days ago expressed great concern about the health of American democracy and said that, you know, South Africa knows that intimidation or violence doesn't work. Well, you know, the fact that they've been very, very cagey about actually sticking it to Zuma, I think actually proves the opposite. Which, you know, I'm touched by their concern for the American Republic, but I do think you know, we might have similar concerns here.
Yeah, I think that was the anti Americanism in the ANC. Kind of just taking the opportunity to be smug, as I think they like to do. Okay, that is, I think, all the time for today. So thank you very much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and we'll be back on Monday to keep talking about what's going on in South Africa and trying to work out what direction is government actually going to take. We'll keep our eyes on it. Cheers, everyone.